Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining the webinar today. This webinar is going over the Fulbright Arctic Initiative. Before we get started, I quickly want to do a sound check with everyone. So if you can, in the chat box, just type to make sure that you can hear us, that would be great. Perfect. It looks like we are coming through loud and clear, which is wonderful. Just as a few reminders, as you can see, there is this chat box. I will be answering questions throughout this webinar, but also saving larger questions for the end. So if you have any issues, please do chat them in. At the end, we will be taking a brief Q&A, so with our panelists and our presenters. So please save those questions for the end, but you're more than welcome to send them throughout. So quickly, again, I want to thank you for joining this webinar today. We are joined today by our presenter, Susan Mundell, who is the Global Portfolio Manager and overseeing this Fulbright Arctic Initiative, as well as Steve Money at the U.S. Department of State. They will be leading this webinar, and any questions you have can be directed towards them. We also have a panelist on the line who is one of the co-lead scholars, and Steve will be introducing him momentarily. But for now, I'm going to pass over the reins to Steve, who will kick off this webinar.
Great. Thank you, Sarah, and thank you to everyone for joining us today. As Sarah said, my name is Steve Money, and I work in the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs at the U.S. Department of State. My bureau's mission is to increase mutual understanding between the people of the United States and people of other countries through education and cultural exchange programs. And we run a number of international programs that are open to artists, teachers, educators, athletes, students, youth, and rising leaders from the United States and over 160 countries around the globe. That includes academic, cultural, sports, and professional exchanges. So it's quite a wide-ranging number of programs, but the one we're going to be talking about today is a new and unique program called the Fulbright Arctic Initiative, and we'll start off just with a quick quote from our lead scholars, who are Mike Sprague and Ross Virginia. Sarah, can you advance the slide? There we go. Thank you. And this quote, I think, really emphasizes the point that collaboration and a network of scholars from around the circumpolar north is really what's needed to address the major challenges and opportunities facing the Arctic today. But I want to step back a minute from that, because I'm not sure how much background and information everyone has on the Fulbright program in general. Next slide, Sarah. The Fulbright program is one of the State Department's oldest and most important people-to-people exchange programs, and it's really the flagship educational exchange program of the U.S. government, and it supports study, research, and teaching by over 8,000 people every year. It operates in over 150 countries, and the program just celebrated its 70th anniversary last year in 2016, and throughout that time, the Fulbright program has had an outstanding record of academic achievement and international collaboration. The program is supported financially, largely by the U.S. government, but also with partner governments around the world. And the funding partnerships that the State Department has with other partner governments, as well as with the private sector, really make Fulbright a global program. And we think that makes it the perfect forum to bring together some of the best minds to study our shared challenges in the Arctic and find some practical solutions. Next slide, Sarah. The Fulbright program has had a long engagement with the Arctic, and that is really grounded in the longstanding Fulbright student and scholar programs. Additional opportunities have been made available in select countries through special Arctic focus programs initiated by the Fulbright commissions in Arctic countries, such as the Fulbright Arctic Chair Awards in Canada and Norway, and a special collaboration between the Fulbright Commission in Iceland and the National Science Foundation here in the U.S. But the most prominent engagement we've had in the Arctic was the inaugural Fulbright Arctic Initiative, which was planned and launched to coincide with the U.S. chairmanship of the Arctic Council, which began in 2015. Next slide, Sarah. The Arctic Initiative was really built on a different kind of model for Fulbright, whereas the traditional Fulbright exchange is kind of a bilateral exchange where a U.S. student or scholar goes to another country for a semester or full academic year, or an international student or scholar comes to the U.S. The Arctic Initiative was really kind of a different model in that it was multilateral, in that it involved scholars from all 8 Arctic countries. It was multidisciplinary, in that it involved scholars from many different disciplines who all brought their individual expertise and backgrounds to the program. It was interactive, responsive, and applied, in that it took its cues from the policy priorities of the Arctic Council and the U.S. chairmanship, really to produce scholarship and research products that were policy relevant. It was also unique in that it involved a lot of community involvement and public outreach. Community involvement in that all of these scholars were active in the Arctic and working very closely with Arctic communities, and their research had a direct application and relevance to Arctic communities. And then the public outreach component, the visibility of the research throughout the period of activity was really essential to this program. So this was an exciting, different model for Fulbright. And to give you an idea of the first Fulbright Arctic Initiative and what it looked like in terms of numbers, next slide, Sarah. It involves scholars from 8 nations, as I said, 17 scholars total, including an additional 2 co-lead scholars. The participating scholars came from 12 different disciplines, and you can see them here and the wide range of backgrounds that these scholars brought to the research that was focused around 4 focus areas: water, energy, health, and infrastructure. And the scholars organized themselves into 3 collaborative working groups around those themes. The program lasted 18 months, involved 3 in-person seminars and ongoing virtual collaboration. And at the end of the program, there were really a lot of unique products and outcomes. Next slide, Sarah. Some of those products and outcomes are available on the program website, and I would encourage you to take a look at that. But the scholars themselves produced a lot of original research, both individually and in their collaborative working groups. They also produced some very clear and actionable policy recommendations that could be taken up and used by Arctic governments and by the Arctic Council. They participated in a number of conferences and workshops, both official Fulbright ones, but also many others that they participated in or organized themselves during the 18 months of the program. The scholars also were very successful in leveraging the Fulbright funding that they received to apply for outside grants or research funding, and they were very successful in that. Again, the community engagement piece was extremely important in this, and all of the scholars were active in partnering with Arctic communities and targeting their research to be relevant to Arctic communities. It's also led, the first round of the Arctic Initiative has led to quite a lot of post-program collaborations. We're about a year out from the end of the program now, and all of the scholars, I continue to see them collaborating and participating in conferences together and working on papers together. So there's going to be a long-lasting legacy for this program. And it's in large part due to the success of the scholars in the first round and all the amazing work that they did that the State Department decided at the end of the U.S. chairmanship to fund a second Fulbright Arctic Initiative. And that's really what we're here to talk about today, in the hopes that a lot of you might apply and put yourselves forward to be participants in the second cohort. Next slide. To give you an idea of what the second Fulbright Arctic Initiative will entail and what the goal is, the goal really is to engage a network of scholars, as we did in the first round, to stimulate international collaboration on important Arctic issues. And once again, we're going to be forming multidisciplinary and multinational research teams to address public policy-focused questions that are relevant to the Arctic and to the people of the North. As we did in the first round, we're going to have two distinguished lead scholars leading the efforts and mentoring the work of the group. Sarah, if you could go to the next slide. Those two lead scholars are Dr. Michael Sfraga of the Woodrow Wilson Center and Dr. Ross Virginia of Dartmouth College. And we're happy to have Ross joining us on the webinar today. If you'd like to say hi, Ross.
Yes. Hello, everyone. Great to have you online. We'll talk some more near the end.
And we're so grateful to have the leadership of these two distinguished scholars, not only to sort of guide the intellectual and research activities of the group of scholars, but also to provide mentoring, facilitate discussion and collaboration. And these guys really are well known in the field of Arctic studies, and we're glad to have them on board. I'm going to turn it over to Susan now, my colleague at the Institute for International Education, to go into some more detail about the Fulbright Arctic Initiative Round 2, including program details and how the application process will work and what the requirements are. So I'll turn it over to you, Susan, and we'll look forward to questions toward the end. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. Next slide, please, Sarah. So I'll provide just a little bit of background on IIE while we're we are a nonprofit, and we are a partnering agency with the Department of State to implement the Fulbright program. And I am the global portfolio manager here at IIE for Fulbright student and scholar programs, and I'm very excited to be part of this Fulbright Arctic Initiative. So I'll provide you with some program details for the second round. It will be also an 18-month program beginning in spring of 2018 and running through the fall of 2019. As we did with the first cohort, there are three in-person seminar meetings, one taking place in the spring of 2018, one in the fall, and one in the final will be in October in 2019. As part of this as well, there's an opportunity to conduct a research exchange visit, which will be a minimum of 6 weeks, a maximum of 12 weeks. This is for U.S. scholars to conduct research in one of the participating Arctic countries abroad, and for our visiting scholars to conduct research here in the U.S. There is ongoing virtual collaboration, which is, as Steve mentioned, led by our co-lead scholars, Mike and Ross. The themes for this round are resilient communities and sustainable economies, and I'll talk about a little bit more about those in a minute. Next slide. Thank you. Community resilience and resilient communities. Policy-relevant research in this theme could address questions such as what specific sustainability challenges do Arctic communities face in the areas such as subsistence activities, food and water security, availability of medical care and educational opportunities. What areas of research might best contribute to the most effective and socially equitable policies on these issues? How can health resources and systems best address community and individual wellness? How can traditional and indigenous knowledge be successfully integrated into community adaptation practices and strategies? How can communities evaluate and respond to potential relocation options in response to coastal erosion, permafrost thaw, and other environmental challenges? And on sustainable economies, policy-relevant research could focus on how the development of energy resources, fisheries, shipping, and telecommunication infrastructure, and increased local educational opportunities and support for Indigenous scholarship can promote the creation of more sustainable Arctic economies that meet community, regional, and national goals? How can advances in technology be used in the Arctic to strengthen data collection and data sharing, advance and adapt the Arctic built environment, better connect Arctic communities to the global economy, and adapt Arctic infrastructure to improve human wellness and increase economic opportunities? How can energy resources, including oil and gas, be developed taking into account the economic needs of Arctic communities while protecting the environment for other activities, such as fisheries, ecotourism, and biodiversity conservation? How can investments in infrastructure for ports, pipelines, freshwater storage, and treatment and transportation be accomplished? Next slide, please. During the award period, grantees will participate in three seminars, complete research exchange visit, and collaborate virtually through online meetings and guidance under the Kalu Scholars. Next slide. The individual exchange visit is a minimum of 6 weeks and maximum of 12 weeks. This is your individual research project. U.S. grantees will complete the exchange visit in one of the seven other Arctic countries, Canada, Denmark, Finland, Iceland, Norway, Russia, or Sweden. And non-U.S. grantees from those countries will complete their exchange visit here in the U.S. A letter of invitation is recommended along with the application at the time that it's due, but not required. Next slide, please. Eligibility. The program is open to scholars at all career stages, including applied researchers, professionals, and Indigenous and traditional knowledge experts. At least four of the scholars will be selected from the U.S., and at least one scholar will be selected from each of the other Arctic Council member states. U.S. applicants must be U.S. citizens and residing in the U.S., and on the visiting side, candidates must be a resident of their country of citizenship at the time the application is due. Applicants also must be conducting current research relevant to the program's themes and objectives and be open to exploring and incorporating comparative interdisciplinary approaches in their investigations and be interested in developing collaborative activities with other Fulbright Active Scholars. Next slide, please. And again, here's some further eligibility requirements, which some of which I mentioned and others which are also available up on our website. Next slide, please. The financial award and benefits which go along with this scholarship is a $40,000 grant for each grantee, and this is used to support travel to each of the program meetings, travel and maintenance for your individual exchange visit, and research materials. Accommodations and meals for full group seminar meetings are provided independent of this grant award. So to attend the opening meeting in spring 2018, and the mid-year in winter of 2019, and the closing meeting. In addition, there is limited accident and sickness benefits coverage for medical expenses. Next slide, please. The application is currently open and will close on Monday, October 16th for international applicants, and it will close on Monday, October 30th for U.S. applicants. For any of if you are an international applicant listening in, the application is submitted, all the applications are submitted online, but you have to contact your Fulbright Commission or IIE office in the case of Russia in your home country to talk about the application and the application process. For U.S. applicants, the application is submitted online through the Embark application system, and a link to our application is available up on our website. Next slide, please. So here, this is going to talk about the timeline. So after the applications are submitted in October, we'll have a technical review here at IIE, and then we will have a peer review meeting, which will be held in January, with notifications of selection in February of 2018. The first meeting, the opening meeting, will take place in Canada in May of 2018. And the mid-year group meeting will be likely in Scandinavia, but the exact location is to be determined, in February of 2019. And the individual research exchange visit will be completed. There is flexibility with when it is completed, but by the end of, by September of 2019, it should all be completed. And the final group meeting will take place in the U.S. in fall of 2019. Next slide, please. To complete your application, there is an online application form, project statement, three letters of reference, language proficiency for non-U.S. applicants, a CV or resume, bibliography, and the letter of invitation. And this is all uploaded directly into the application online. Next slide, please. Great. So the project statement, we'll talk a little bit more about this component of the application. This is your opportunity to explain the specific strengths to reviewers and potential hosts. And I will actually, I'd like to ask Ross if you could provide some of your insights from reviewing the applications in the last round about what makes a compelling project statement.
Yeah, thank you very much. And thank you, Susan and Steve and Sarah, for pulling this webinar together. So I just a couple of thoughts. I mean, this is really an amazing program, and we're asking an awful lot from the scholars. We're asking you to develop a project that hones in on the kinds of research that you're currently doing, maybe a slight change or new direction in that, but a project that shows some continuation of your previous work and will make a significant contribution to your discipline and perhaps to the networks in which you're engaged. So this, in many ways, is somewhat similar to writing a grant proposal, if you will. It should highlight your skills, your training. You should be asking questions that are important to the development of your future career in Arctic research and Arctic science, or as a practitioner in your professional connections to Arctic issues and problems. In presenting that, you should be setting up opportunities for you to engage in a collaborative group project. So that's the second part of this. So in addition to being, a Fulbright scholar in this context, we're also asking you then to move into a group setting where you can work in a collaborative, multidisciplinary team to do some new creative applied research. And that's a related but also a somewhat different challenge. So as you're presenting your work, we really ask that you make sure that you have thought very clearly about the public policy impact of both your individual project, but certainly where you might contribute in the group. The Fulbright Arctic Initiative is meant to advance knowledge to action. It's meant to provide insight and training and experience in making these connections between research and policy and the policy community. So anything that you can do to show your engagement in this kind of a process, the better your application. I think another thing to recognize is, you know, Mike Sprague and I and the peer review team and Steve and Susan and others, we're going to have a large number of applications, and they're all going to be wonderful. You guys are doing terrific work. But in addition, we're just looking at your individual scholarship. We truly are building a Fulbright Arctic Initiative team. So we're looking for candidates that, A, maybe have experience in collaborative work, but if not, don't be discouraged. But tell us why you want to become engaged in collaborative work. There should be a rationale as to why you feel this Fulbright opportunity is a special opportunity for you, and make sure it's very clear to us what you bring to the Fulbright Arctic Initiative. Think very clearly about that in your statement about your individual research, but in particular, what kinds of talents and vision and skill might you bring to the collaborative project. I think there's another slide here that carries forward. Yeah. So a little bit more here, and I've touched on some of this. What is the specific preparation that you want to highlight about your background? Remember, we're reading lots of applications. This goes with anyone who's been familiar with writing grant proposals. Get to the high points early and make sure that we can understand how you would shine as a Fulbright scholar. But also, importantly, how will Fulbright advance your career in Arctic issues, Arctic science, the arts, whatever dimension of Arctic that you're engaged in. We all want to share in that success and contribute to it. Think about the research that's important to your nation, your country. If there are specific areas that are high priorities for the Arctic in your nation, and you're contributing to those, make sure that you share that so that the international team of the peer review committee really understands your motivations and what it is that you want to contribute to. Maybe finally, and we can take some questions, I'm sure. A big part of this is sharing the work of Fulbright with the broad community. So we ask you to think about how are you going to share your work and your information. And we mean not just in the peer-reviewed literature, but we mean in other ways to reach the public. It might be in writing an op-ed. It might be in having a blog. It might be in having a website where you share your work or you create a dialogue among researchers in your communities. It might be going to schools, local schools, and talking about Arctic issues and policy and how your research is relevant and important. Local museums, all these kinds of things we value. We provide training on how to do these things, but the face of this project is very important that people throughout the Arctic understand the key issues and that we present these in a way that they're accessible to small communities, to people in the policy community, and to academics alike. So the last tip I would give you is that if you're online and you're wondering, well, you know, am I competitive or how does this look for me, how will it work, make sure you go to our website. I would suggest that you look at the Fulbright Arctic scholars from the first round and look at who they are and what their backgrounds are, what the, you know, what disciplines and fields that they come from. And I think you can see from that a little bit of what the selection process might be about. There are also examples of some of the products that we've produced, listings of some of the outreach and other kinds of projects that we've been engaged in. So I think if you spend some time on the website, you'll get a sense of, I think, the demands of the program, but just as importantly, what the rewards of being part of Fulbright Arctic would be for you as an individual. So I encourage you to really spend some time on that website before you prepare your application. And maybe the last tip is to think very carefully about your exchange site visit. Why do you want to go to this particular university or place or community? What are the strengths of that versus other locations? How long might you be there? And what arrangements might you be able to show in advance that you're welcome to be there? So think about the exchange as well. We can help you with these types of things. We're there, the IIE, Steve, myself, Mike Sraga. You know, we're there to help you network and connect, but pay particular attention to the importance of the exchange visit as well. So maybe I've gone on too long, but I'll stop here and see where we can go with some questions.
Thanks so much, Ross, for that. That was really great insight that I think will help all the potential applicants on this webinar. Before we get to the Q&A portion, we just want to highlight ways for any interested parties to connect with us. As always, we have our website, cis.org/Arctic. Most of the information and questions that you might have can be found on this website. You can also get a link to our email address that we are actively checking and looking forward to answering any questions you may have in order to help strengthen your applications. And we are also on Twitter and Facebook. You can see the handles and the direct links on the website right now, or on the screen right now. And so if you have any questions, please feel free to use any of these mediums to get in touch with us. And as I mentioned, please continue to send your questions through the chat box. We have a few that have already come in, and if we don't get to any of your questions during this presentation, again, please email us with any questions that you have as you are applying. The first question, and Susan or Steve, this might be in your wheelhouse. We have an applicant who is curious about if the chances are reduced if they already have a Fulbright fellowship in the past.
Want to take that?
Sure, I'll take that. I would say any applicant who has had a previous Fulbright in the past is absolutely eligible to apply. As a general preference, the Fulbright program tries to give the opportunity for an international exchange experience to new candidates when possible. At the same time, we recognize that this program has some unique demands and opportunities and challenges and sort of unique aspects that aren't your traditional, you know, Fulbright exchange. So to anybody who has had a previous grant, I would recommend trying to explain in your application how your previous Fulbright experience is a strength that you would bring as a member of the next group of Fulbright Arctic scholars, why that's prepared you to work in an international multidisciplinary team kind of setting, what kinds of products and outcomes came from your first exchange that would be relevant here or that demonstrate your ability to bring a project from conception to achievement and accomplishment at the end. So short answer, yes, Fulbright, former Fulbright grantees are eligible. Long answer is that you're going to have to do a little more work to sort of explain why that's a strength and what that would add to you as an individual applicant to a program like this.
Thanks, Steve. Additionally, we have another applicant who's curious if you can give any insight as to the numbers of applicants we had last year for this award.
I'll take that one again. It's a little difficult to say because there are sort of a number of individual competitions. You know, each country narrowed down their list of nominees that then went on to a further stage of review. Applicants are not necessarily all compared one to another when we're looking to, balance a diverse and multinational, multidisciplinary team. It's going to depend this time around. The themes are different, so a lot is going to depend on the number of people who apply in each theme and the way that a cohort is built from the most outstanding applicants. So I don't necessarily want to give a number, just because I don't think that would be necessarily useful in crafting a competitive application. I think Ross's suggestions on how to build a compelling and strong project proposal are really the most useful tips.
Great. Susan, this question is for you. We have an artist who has done extensive work as an Arctic landscape arena for a long time. Is it essential that her work fall into both of these themes as part of the core application, or can you give her some tips as to how to really go about crafting that application?
Well, I would say that the it's certainly important to demonstrate how the project, first of all, how the project fits into one of the eligible themes, but then how this research will then be utilized post-fellowship. So if the applicant doesn't have a background in it before or isn't, you know, kind of working in the area in which she's proposing to conduct the research, then I guess I would wonder how it would be connected later on. So.
Yeah, Ross here, maybe I could add to that just a little bit. I think, for example, if you were interested in understanding the dynamics of landscape change or environmental change through your perspective of art, and this was could be connected to the resilient communities theme, that would seem to be a natural. And again, I guess thinking about how your art would be projected into the future to connect to some of these Arctic themes would be important. We had an artist in the first round, and that was an extremely successful contribution to the Fulbright Arctic Initiative. So we are very, very much interested in approaches to bring the arts, that bring in journalism, bring in literature. That we speak very broadly when we're talking about research. We're really looking at this multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary synthesis and fusion that comes from really talented people coming together to work on problems that impact policy and create opportunities for solutions to complicated problems. So that's your challenge. If you see your art and your creative work contributing to that, then you know, work at that in your application, but that's exciting stuff.
Thanks for that, Russ. I would just add too that we're very open to people from a sort of non-traditional academic background. You know, not just scientists or researchers, people used to being in labs or doing field work, but people who are professionals like artists, like health practitioners, lawyers, journalists, photographers, and also people, you know, from an indigenous and traditional knowledge background that maybe is sort of outside Western academic traditions, but that bring a lot of experience and knowledge to issues, environmental, economic, and social that are affecting the North. So when we really say we're open to all disciplines, we mean it, and we're interested to see the ways that different scholars from different backgrounds tie their work into the themes that we've presented and also the policy challenges facing the Arctic.
Great, thank you all. Regarding the exchange visit, should applicants present this in the application, or is there a possibility for them to develop the idea of their exchange throughout the program?
No, that has to be mentioned in the proposal. That's an important part of the project.
I would agree that applicants should have an idea of where they want to go and why. I think some of the details don't necessarily need to be 100% concrete in that, you know, I want to go for 62 days on these dates. You know, that can be worked out later. But in general, having an idea of where you want to go and why it's important to do the research that you want to do in a certain location really is necessary to show sort of a well-thought-out and viable proposal.
Great, thanks. We have two questions that are fairly similar. The first one is involving if applicants can go to two different Arctic countries, especially if they're in a border region. And the second part is if this is a possibility, do they need two letters of invitation?
I would say yes, it's possible. You know, we'd like to have scholars have sort of one sort of base of operations, so that may be a university in one country, and if they are in a border region, then doing some, you know, short-term trips abroad to the second country and working with potential collaborators there. I would say that if you're interested in doing that, the more letters of support that you could provide that show that you've got potential collaborators in these countries, people who are interested in your work, interested in working with you, interested in helping you and providing facilities when you're abroad, all of those things strengthen an application.
Great. And we have a couple questions regarding Greenland. Steve, do you mind going over, I guess, the eligibility of Greenland for this award?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, American applicants are eligible to apply and propose a project that will be carried out in Greenland. And there's a lot of potential collaborators at the University of Greenland, including one of the scholars that participated in the first round. Greenland is part of the Kingdom of Denmark, so when you have to designate a country that you would be going to, you may have to choose, you know, Denmark from a drop-down box, but then, you know, explain in your application that you want to go to Greenland at such and such host institution to do such and such research. But absolutely, applications for projects in Greenland are welcome, and applications from Greenlandic scholars to participate in this program are also welcome, and those scholars would apply through the Fulbright Commission in Denmark.
Great, thanks, Steve. We do have another question regarding the 6 to 12 weeks. These applicants are curious, is this able to be broken up, or does it all have to be completed at one time?
It doesn't have to be conducted all at one time, necessarily. We would want, though, a single exchange visit, at least one of however many visits, to be at least 6 weeks. And the reason for that is the benefit that comes from being in a location in another country for an extended period of time. And this is really one of the core hallmarks of Fulbright exchanges, is that they're in-depth, long-term experiences that really can build cross-cultural understanding, intercultural communication skills, and lead to one of the main goals of Fulbright, which is increased mutual understanding between Americans and people of other countries. So I would say, yes, you don't have to spend 3 months in one place, but we do ask that you spend a minimum of 6 weeks in one place. And then if you want to spend, you know, a second visit because, you know, you need to, you're conducting research that extends over a longer period of time, for example, it's possible. I think we would ask that you explain your rationale in your application for wanting to do that and tie it to the research that you're proposing.
Great, thanks. We have a few questions about the letter of invitation. One of them is asking for advice on how to approach potential collaborators, as well as the second one is regarding if applicants would be put at a great disadvantage if they happen to not obtain one of these letters.
Ross, can I ask you to chime in with some thoughts on how people who may not have a lot of experience in the Arctic countries or in collaborative research might make some connections and tap into that network, and the ways that either you and Mike or scholars from Round One or institutions like the University of the Arctic might be of use in finding those connections?
Yeah, no, these are really good questions. First off, I think that's one of the responsibilities and roles, and one of the things that Mike and I enjoy doing is trying to help scholars make connections. So, don't, you know, reach out to us in that capacity. Steve mentioned the University of the Arctic, and I think that's a great resource. Go to their website. There are 170 institutions now that are members of the University of the Arctic, the Virtual University Network. They have a large number of thematic working groups on almost every subject you could think of. And so this lists institutions, individuals, you can find through the University of the Arctic where really strong groups or programs are located. UArctic has been a partner with really the Fulbright Arctic Initiative. We work closely with them in round one, and their staff are quite willing. A big part of what they do is try to match researchers with others in the Arctic or just help people find places to do their work. So those are some initial steps. But be in touch with Susan and IIE. They can also provide help. But please reach out and do it early. I think the earlier that you can find an exchange site or a partner or a group to work with, the stronger and the more focused your proposal will turn out to be.
Great. Thanks so much, Ross. Again, some more questions regarding the letter of invitation. Are they able to submit two letters, one being from Denmark and one from Greenland? Can you advise a little bit more on that process?
Sure. I would suggest, getting letters of invitation or affiliation from anybody that you propose to work with. So if you were proposing to spend some time in Greenland and in Denmark at two different institutions, then having letters from scholars or collaborators at both those institutions are helpful. If you're proposing to, say, do independent research in Greenland and not necessarily affiliate with an institution there, but maybe work with collaborators in Denmark who have ongoing projects in Greenland, then letters from Denmark make sense. I think you'll have to judge, you'll know what your proposal is, you'll know what your research is, you'll know who your collaborators are, and you'll know who the best people to write some supportive letters would be.
Perfect. In addition, we do have a question regarding a scholar who is overseas currently in Greenland during the application deadline. How imperative is it that he must be residing in the U.S. at the time of application?
When we say residing in the U.S., we really mean that people have their main base here in the U.S. If a person is out of the country on a temporary basis at the exact date of the deadline, that's okay, but we want scholars to have their main affiliations with U.S. institutions or their main place of residence be here in the U.S. So it may be that people happen to be teaching abroad or something during this fall semester, but that we would consider sort of a temporary time outside the U.S. But we would want people to have a demonstrated connection to a U.S. institution.
Perfect. In regards to the project statement, are there the page limits? Does that include the reference pages as well as the bibliography? Can you enlighten this applicant a bit more on those restrictions?
Susan?
Yeah, I actually don't know offhand. I was going to jump to the website.
I was going to say all of those documents count separately. So you'll upload those pieces of your application separately. So the pages of your CV won't take away from the project statement pages, and the bibliography won't take away from the project statement. I would take a look at the website and the actual application instructions, which set page limits for each of those individual pieces.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you both. One of our fellow IIE colleagues is just asking, Susan, do you mind clarifying the difference between the letter of reference and the letter of invitation / support for any applicant?
So the letter of reference is, from a colleague who can speak about your abilities, about your the qualities and merits of your proposal and your research. And the letter of invitation is actually from the potential host institution in the country overseas where you would be conducting your research. And essentially, the letter of invitation would, you know, demonstrate, yes, we support this candidate's proposal and are happy to provide X type of resources for X amount of time. Does that help to clarify the difference between the reference letter and the invitation letter?
I would just add that the letters of reference, and there are three required, should really come from people who know you well. These are, you know, long-time professional colleagues. These are your supervisors or research collaborators, or if you're, say, a newly minted PhD, then a thesis advisor or somebody who's really familiar with your work and your professional credentials, who can speak to that aspect of your application. The letter of invitation, it may not be from somebody you know very well. This is maybe not somebody you've necessarily worked with a lot in the past, but who you're interested in collaborating with, who works at an institution abroad that has the resources and you know, research facilities that you want access to, and who's willing to write a letter saying that, you know, they'll welcome you to campus, they will provide access to facilities, they will collaborate with you on research and products, that sort of thing. So I would clarify also that the three letters of reference are from people who know you well and who can write serious recommendations that speak to your qualifications and credentials, and the letter of invite is from somebody abroad who may or may not, you know you well and have collaborated with you significantly in the past, but really is more about the access and arrangements for the individual exchange visit.
Great, thanks so much. So at this time, those are all the questions that we have, so we can start to wrap up this webinar. I want to thank everyone for taking the time to attend today. This webinar will be recorded and placed on our website. I will also send out the recording as soon as I have obtained it. It typically takes about 3 business days, but I'll pass the reins back over to Susan and Steve to close out the webinar.
Great. Thanks very much, Sarah, for moderating. Thank you, Ross and Steve, to both of you for your feedback, your insights, and for taking the time to participate. And thank you all for tuning in and taking the time out of your busy day to hear more about the program. Steve, I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Susan, and thanks, Sarah, for organizing this today. Thank you, Ross, for being here, and thank all of you for listening. We hope to see some really interesting and strong proposals from a lot of you. And as Susan said, you know, we're open to questions and eager to help guide anybody who wants some assistance or tips or guidance to strengthen their applications. And Sarah, maybe we can go back one slide and show those contact details again, the email address, but also the website. And Ross really pointed out that there's a lot of useful resources here, not only a lot of the outcomes and products that Round 1 developed, but some really useful and relevant, I think, policy links to organizations like the Arctic Council that really does a lot of the international agenda setting in the Arctic, and links to the program of the current chair of the Arctic Council, which is Finland, links to indigenous organizations and permanent participants at the Arctic Council that have a lot of really good information on their websites. So I would recommend taking a look at a lot of that stuff too. And with that, I'll just say again, thank you, and turn it over to Ross if he has any last words.
Yeah, well, thank you, Steve and Susan, Sarah, for putting this on. And now I just encourage all of you to study up and think about the program. And I know the application process can seem a little daunting, but I think it's a very worthwhile one. And it always helps your research, no matter what, to try to explain what you're doing and why and to different people. We're trying to build a new team, and each of you has a network, and I view the Fulbright Arctic Initiative as building a network of networks to have a really lasting effect on the way we view the Arctic and the way that the academic and professional communities can contribute to solving problems and to policy. So if there's anything that the co-lead scholars, Mike Sraga and I, can do to encourage you or help you as you move through this, please don't hesitate to reach out, and good luck.